From KCRW, this is Here Be Monsters.
I grew up in northern South America, in Venezuela, and we had fruit trees in our backyard that were visited often by bats. I wasn't scared of them. When I was a child, I was very curious about animals in general, so I didn't know about echolocation back then. But sometimes they do make little high-pitched noises, so I would listen to their sounds and watch them just fly around the trees and things like that. So my name is Charlene Santana, and I'm an assistant professor at the biology department in the University of Washington, and also the curator of mammals at the Berg Museum. So the Mexican free-tailed bats, they have very smooth and silky fur, and they have this forward pointed ears, and then they have a membrane that connects their legs, and they have a tail that goes through that membrane and sticks out, which gives them the name free-tailed bats.
Now entering SeaTac Airport Station, doors to my left.
These bats tend to live in really large colonies. I think they are the most gregarious mammal species. There's no other species of mammals that makes such huge aggregations. It's hard to study some of the acoustic interactions that occur between bats. So they produce very high frequency sounds, and those high frequency sounds don't travel very long distances. So you have to be really close, relatively close to a bat in order to get its echolocation calls and what they're doing with them. One way to overcome that obstacle is by recording at roosts, like caves or hollow trees, and then get an idea of how they might be interacting. But again, it takes a lot of skill and a lot of effort to get these kind of data from the bats.
Here Be Monsters, the podcast about
a hurricane of bats,
the podcast about
the unknown.
My old friend Helen, she told me that bats live in the hills. She said they live in an old iron mine. And she said that when they fly out at night, by the thousands, they look like big black sheets that cover the valley. Helen makes a point of being open to new experiences, and I think that's what first attracted me to her. She can make friends with nearly anyone, and she can find the sacred in nearly anything. I noticed this from the first night we met. It was years ago, and it was completely by chance. She was shoeless and covered in dirt, wearing a giant backpack and standing in a parking lot, and I was on my bike with a bag full of bagels that I'd just stolen from a dumpster. I saw her standing there and I figured she was homeless and hungry, but I was wrong on both fronts. She just likes to be barefoot. We dated for a while, but that story is both complicated and uninteresting, so let's skip that for now. Every few years, I feel the strong urge to flee, to leave things behind and try again elsewhere. It's a several-year itch that I keep scratching, and I think it becomes less endearing with each repetition. But it's how I've lived most of my life, I put tremendous effort into starting something new, and I put less effort into fixing what's broken. I fear things when they become too familiar. And that's partly why I identify with migratory bats. It was years after we stopped dating when Helen told me about the bats. She told me about the mine in the desert hills of central Colorado. She told me how each year, 250,000 of them show up to use it as their summer home. They raise their pups and they sing their ultrasonic hunting songs, incredibly loud, but completely inaudible to humans. Who knows how long they've made the trek? The mine closed back in the Great Depression, and when the families left, the buildings left too. So now, all that's left are crumbling foundations and a hollow mountain with a small tear in its side. God knows why the locals started calling it the Glory Hole, but they did, and they still do. Last summer, my urge to flee hit a peak. It made enough sense. I'd lived in Seattle for going on 4 years. My day job felt safe, and I liked my friends, and I was dating someone that I cared for very deeply. And so I scratched the itch. I packed up everything into 7 giant cardboard boxes and mailed them east on a train. I severed the needed ties, felt the requisite guilt, and I bought a plane ticket to Boston with a 5-day layover in Colorado. When I landed, it was deep into the summer where the weather could turn on a dime. And for several afternoons, I watched the Colorado Rockies ring rain and lightning out of black clouds. And then I met up with Helen and her girlfriend Laura in downtown Denver. And then we drove for hours. We drove south and up and south and up and south and up into the San Luis Valley towards the Glory Hole.
Mile-wide valley.
Is it 50 really? Miles?
Yeah. It's huge and flat. And you can see down to New Mexico.
And what can you see in front of us right now?
Dark silhouetted mountain, lightning over in the distance, and a whole bunch of sagebrush. I look out and it looks like God. Like there's God, you know? Oh, and here's a cow on the road.
And how does this moment feel?
I think the tension is mounting. There's a lot of excitement around going to see the bats.
The Mexican free tails.
Mexican free tails?
You know what I learned? Is I learned that it's the same species of bats that's on the Bacardi rum bottle.
Did you bring some Bacardi?
No, I didn't. I can't say I'm a rum person, you know? A lot of people here.
Yeah. They're probably all just arriving too.
Do we need to go check in?
Yeah.
The next morning was beautiful and clear. We'd camped at a spot just 2 miles downhill from the Glory Hole. It's a spot called Valley View Hot Springs, and it's the sort of place where friendly people tend to take off all their clothes and sit in rocky pools all day. I'd been there once before and loved it. I didn't see the bats that time, though, but I do have a fond memory of a sudden hailstorm that rolled through the valley and sent everyone running naked and steaming from the pools. Hailstones the size of green peas bounced off of bodies and tents and the corrugated metal roof that I took shelter under. But some days at Valley View are clear, and that's what we were hoping for, because we only had one shot with the bats. Helen and Laura had to be back in Denver for work, and I had a flight to Boston. So we spent the day soaking in the pools and laying in the sun, looking out over the valley the way gods might. Laura and Helen pointed out a trail far off to our right, a trail that wound up through the old mining towns, across the open hillside, past piles of mine tailings, and straight up to a rocky point nearly 10,000 feet above sea level. They told me that that's where we'd find the bats, That's the glory hole. After lunch, Laura played this on her guitar. I have kind of an unusual audio recorder. It's unusual because it can record at really high speeds, and therefore it can record really high-pitched sounds. And these sounds are so fast and high that our ears can't even hear them. And these kind of sounds are called ultrasounds. Of course, even though my recorder can capture these sounds, it doesn't mean that I can hear them in the moment. So sometimes when I get home, I'll put the recordings on my computer and I'll stretch them out to see if I missed anything neat up there. Let's check. Doesn't seem like there's much up there, but it does sound nice, right? Maybe those guitar strings sound a little bit pluckier. Maybe Laura's voice has a bit more breathiness. Maybe you can hear the high-pitched sloshing of the distant creek a tiny bit better. But maybe you're just imagining it. Anyhow, it was good to check. We went back to the pools, laid on our backs as the afternoon wore on. I watched a dark cloud crest over the hillside above me, and it started dumping its rain and blasted off a few small lightning bolts. And then another cloud came, and another, and we ran back to the tents while the ground was pelted around us. We considered calling off our trek to the glory hole altogether, but then the rain stopped, and we saw some patches of blue sky.
Tent.
So I think we have to decide now whether we're going or not.
It's pretty warm and dry in this tent.
So the hike's, what's the hike, 2 miles?
2 miles there, 2 miles back.
It's really exposed, the trail up there, and I saw a lot of lightning in that storm earlier. How worried should we be about that?
Mildly worried.
Because, you know, the thing is I was trying to figure out where the weather was coming from. At first I thought it was coming from the west, and then I thought it was coming from the east, and now it seems like it's coming from the south. I'm not too worried about the south or the west. It's the east that worries me because we can't see it at all. You know, it's like over that ridge. And that's right where we're going to be walking. We're going to be walking on that ridge. And so I'm just worried about something coming up over the top of that and snagging us.
Yes.
It's going to go for you though, Jeff.
You're the tallest one.
So I don't feel worried.
Lightning rod.
How are you going to be the one that calls it if we're turning around, Helen?
No, we all get to make that call together.
I think we have a great window right now.
I think we're going to get wet, and I'm fine with that. As long as we don't get struck by lightning, I think we're good. Anything else?
We're going to get up, and we're going to go, and we're going to visit our friends, the bats.
We see a sign. The sign's telling us to start to be quiet because we're approaching the glory hole.
The glory hole. That's the glory hole. Mint
bluish greens and tans like sand. You can see the mist off in the distance, so it's cool watching the clouds come in.
How y'all doing?
I'm a little nervous about this
storm.
Do you think it's getting closer?
I do.
Like, see, there's that little town right over there.
Totally.
If it's on the other side of that, that means
then
we gotta
totally
start
fucked.
I'm not worried about the rain. I'm just worried about the lightning up here.
Yeah. If it was really bad, we'd want to get back down into that valley right before the trail split.
Yeah, definitely.
It does look like it's coming towards us, though.
Yeah. I'm scared of standing on a mine full of iron with lightning in the distance. Makes me nervous.
I haven't seen any lightning for, I think, 3 or 4 minutes.
Yeah.
That's not to say there won't be more of it.
Yeah.
What did you see around the corner over there?
A very dense storm heading right our way.
What do you think we should do? If there's one way to go, it's to get killed
at the glory hole. No doubt about it.
But if we died up here together, at least we dated at one point.
So ultrasound is sounds that are above human hearing, so about 20 kilohertz. Bats use sound to navigate and find prey, and they use ultrasound for that. They use the echoes from those sounds that they produce to navigate their environment, not hit things. There's a lot going on up there that we have no clue about.
First, there's just a couple. It's just a thin line of them. And then all of a sudden, this huge wave of hundreds of them, maybe thousands, coming out all at once. Kind of looks like a dark cloud. And they're spinning around because it's raining. Kind of like we're standing under an eye of a hurricane of bats.
Bats live in a completely different world than we do. They live in a world of sound and smells, and reality for them is very different than how we perceive reality.
Oh, look at this. Look at that. Look at this. This is recording their calls.
Oh my God.
There's hundreds and thousands of them.
Wow.
There are so many bats. They're scattered. Oh my God.
I think if I were a bat and I was hungry, I feel like each raindrop might jar me quite a bit. I think it would be very disorienting. Yeah, I do feel kindred. I feel like they're little omens of something. I'm not quite sure. I feel like they're little messengers to me.
We only made it about 10 minutes in the hurricane of bats before the real storm showed up. This time the wind blew harder, the rain fell faster, and we started to see lightning touch down again across the valley. The day finally turned a deep greenish blue, and it became cold in an instant, and the cold snapped my brain back out of its bat-drunk stupor, and I became aware again of the very real danger of the approaching lightning. And so we left the bats to swoop and swirl above no one, and we headed back downhill, walked back to the hot springs in the rain, and then sat in the sauna, and then slept in our tents until morning, when it was clear again. Why do these bats migrate?
So what these bats are doing is they are avoiding harsh environmental conditions. They are avoiding cold fronts and scarcity of food resources. So they migrate to places where there's more food. There are some parts of the population that stay within those areas, and nobody really knows why that is and what kind of strategies they use to be able to stay. They don't fare very well. There's a lot of individuals that will die if they stay. Mm-hmm.
And then they just wait around for the rest of the colony to come back.
Pretty much, yeah.
Mm-hmm. I had no idea.
Yeah, yeah.
Some migrators stay.
Yeah, back. Yeah. But it's much more advantageous to migrate for them. There's less likely, I guess, for them to die.
Do bats mate for life?
No, they don't mate for life.
Okay, there is one other thing. Do you think it's appropriate that I'm trying to draw an allegory between me moving across the country and these bats moving across a giant landmass?
No, I think it's beautiful.
Yeah, that's cool.
You don't think it's just trying to find poetry and something for the sake of finding poetry? Because that's what I'm worried about.
Well, how are you like the bats?
Yeah, how are you like a bat, Jeff?
How am I like the bats? Well, the bats, they leave their homes. They fly all the way to a place where they feel like the hunting's better, you know what I mean? And, like, I had something that was pretty good where I was, but I decided to leave it, you know? I decided to leave it, and maybe I'll go back someday, but one thing I found out about the bats is that every summer, some of them don't leave. Some of them stay here and try to survive the winter and never go back home, you know? And those bats are much more likely to die. But they still do it. Some of them still try.
So you gotta keep on moving.
I don't know.
I think you should write poetry. For the sake of writing poetry. And it's a nice poem. What is the group word for bats?
I believe it's a murder of bats.
No.
A guano of bats.
No.
A dropping of bats.
Trains approach the station from both directions.
Do not cross tracks when warning lights are flashing.
As I left Denver, I kissed Helen and Laura on their foreheads, and we all said, I love you. I walked towards the train, and I noticed that I was crying.
Welcome aboard our TV commuter rail. This is the University of Colorado A line to Denver Airport Station.
Airborne, we're showing 3 hours and 32 minutes. Scheduled arrival time at the gate in Boston is 5:53 local time, and we expect to be on time, maybe a couple minutes early, but right now we're just showing an on-time arrival.
Seven giant cardboard boxes of my possessions waited for me at my new apartment, and I found no answers in them, but I did find excitement and doubt, regret, love and loss, and a laundry list of cliches for emotions. I also found curiosity in the life of the bats. Curiosity to know if I'd overstretched the metaphor. Curiosity to know whether I'd stay, or maybe one day migrate back west.
And after that nice landing, welcome to Boston Logan International Airport. Local time is 5:30 a.m. Please use care and caution when opening overhead compartments, as the contents may have moved on the flight today. Enjoy the rest of your day here in the Boston area, wherever your final destination may be.
My name is Jeff Entman, and I edited and produced this episode of Here Be Monsters, with help from Bethany Denton. Over on our website, we have a picture of Charlene Santana in her lab at the University of Washington. She's holding a jar with the preserved body of a Mexican free-tail bat. I've also put up some pictures of me and Helen Kadich and Laura Goldhammer driving through the mountains of central Colorado and hiking up to the glory hole. We're at hbmpodcast.com. You can follow us on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. You can say nice things to us in the form of an iTunes review. We work really hard on this show, so we appreciate the thoughts. Music on this episode came from The Black Spot and from Laura Goldhammer, who is an amazing musician and animator. We have a link up on our website. Again, we're at hbmpodcast.com. Oh, and I should probably mention that I misidentified the species of bat that is on the Bacardi rum bottle. I don't know where I got into my head that that was a free-tailed bat. It's actually a fruit bat, so that's my error. Here Be Monsters is a part of the Independent Producer Project from KCRW, where Nick White is our editor and Kristen Lepore is our manager. Thanks for listening. More episodes soon.
If this is our last time on this camp pad, in this tent, I will be happy.
Yeah.
What do you think those birds outside are trying to tell us?
They want some woven wheats.
They have to peck me open to get those.
Here Be Monsters, sponsored by Woven Wheats.
Anything else?
We're going to get up and we're going to go and we're going to visit our friends, the bats.
Great.
Is that great material or what?
That was 10 out of 10. 10 out of 10, Jeff.
What? 10 out of 10?